This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. If you're a Democrat running for the White House, you can make your case for defeating Trump with the persuasion theory, whereby you draw moderate Democrats and disaffected Republicans into your purplish boudoir. Or you can make your case with the expansion theory, whereby you boost turnout by sounding klaxons, giving free rides to the polls, talking about civic duty, and tailoring your message to the marginalized and the youths. Veteran political operative James Carville hates the expansion theory.
The entire theory that by expanding the electorate, increasing turnout, you can win an election is the equivalent of climate denial. If you're voting for him because you think he'll win the election, because he'll galvanize heretofore sleepy parts of the electorate, then politically you're a fool.
There's this fear that if Sanders or even Warren is the nominee for the Democratic Party, that they will lose, that they are not electable, that only moderates are electable because they fear they will alienate swing voters. They're thinking of white people who swing from voting Republican to voting Democrat.
If regular voters are scrutinized, just imagine how pundits probe swing voters, all the while missing an important voting block hiding in plain sight. Ibram X. Kendi, executive director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University and author of How to Be an Anti-Racist, calls that unseen block the other swing voter. Someone who is not disengaged, but who is unsatisfied and unwilling to cast a ballot for those who neither serve nor even recognize them. Kendi says these other swing voters have swung elections and may again.
I talk about what I call the other swing voters who swing from voting Democrat to not voting at all or voting third party. These people are distinct from people who are not registered to vote, who have no intention to vote. People who assess candidates, who assessed the candidate in 2016, did not like the candidate, or was voter suppressed, or ended up choosing a third party. There were more Obama voters who swung to not voting or voting third party than there were Obama voters who swung to Trump in 2016.
In the piece you wrote in The Atlantic, one thing that really struck me was the distinction you made between the non-voter and this other swing voter. Yet they are dealt with the same by political surrogates and pundits and the media in general.
Obviously, if you have two Americans and one is not registered to vote and has no intention of voting, and you have another person who is registered to vote, who does not like the Democratic candidate, has never really voted Republican, and they choose not to vote, ultimately, the result is neither of them voted. But they're not the same types of people. Candidates realize that they have to persuade white swing voters, whether they're the Republican or the Democratic candidate. These other swing voters have to be persuaded to vote for the Democratic candidate too. But instead, the white swing voters are treated like they have agency. You have to get them to vote. But these other swing voters, typically younger, typically people of color, especially young black voters, they're treated like political cattle. They have to be turned out.
Will these new or irregular voters show up?
Hispanics, young people, married women, white women, who in the past have been occasional voters, young people.
Because
of course,
we need young people to vote, we need you to show up.
To be essentially brought and dragged to the polls against their will, as opposed to maybe you should choose a different candidate who can actually excite them and energize them, which is precisely what people recognize they have to do for white swing voters.
Now let's talk about numbers. Can the group of other swing voters really make the crucial difference?
If you take the 2016 election in which Hillary Clinton lost the states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin by a combined 80,000 votes, the number of Obama voters who did not vote in 2016 far and away eclipsed the number of votes she lost those states by. You know, I think it was 4.4 million Obama voters did not vote in 2016. I believe an additional 2.3 Obama voters swung to voting third party. This is more than the 6 million Obama voters who voted for Trump. And so what I make the case about in the text is not that other swing voters are more important. The case that I make is that they're both important. And a candidate who can attract both is a winning candidate.
Something else that you've noted is that the Obama voter who switched to Trump overwhelmingly believes that Trump is doing a great job and identifies more as Republican than Democrat. These are not people that progressive Democratic candidates or moderate ones are likely to turn. Isn't that your argument?
There was a recent study in these key swing states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania on white swing voters who swung from Obama to Trump. 70% of them favor the job that Trump is doing. According to the pollsters, they resemble Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
By contrast, 70% of other swing voters who voted for Obama in 2012 and who did not vote in 2016 view Trump in an unfavorable manner and, quote, resemble Democrats. So if the Democrats had to choose which group of voters are they more likely to win, obviously they're more likely to win those who resemble Democrats.
Back in January, you wrote a piece called Why I Fear a Moderate Democratic Nominee.
We've heard so much about the fears that moderates have of putting up a progressive nominee, that they will alienate centrist voters, that they will not be able to attract Republicans. Moderate candidates actually alienate other swing voters. They alienate younger people. They alienate some groups of people of color. They alienate progressives. There's legitimate fears for electing a progressive candidate, but there are also legitimate fears for electing a moderate candidate. It was a moderate candidate that lost to Trump in 2016. If we put up another candidate who is not able to excite young people and young people of color who are less likely to vote and only energize the people who are most likely to vote anyway, to me, that's not a winning strategy for Democrats. You look at Bernie Sanders' win in Nevada. He not only ran away with young voters compared to his competitors, he also ran away with white, non-college educated voters, which is Trump's base, which is the base of white swing voters.
What does recognizing the other swing voter mean for the press and the campaigns and the elections?
Well, it has long been thought that the white centrist is the political jewel, the most important voter. You label any type of voter as the most important voter, what's going to happen? Campaigns are going to organize themselves and organize their policies around attracting the type of voter who they believe decides and swings elections. But what if there's another extremely important voter? And what if that voter today is young and Black? What if that voter tomorrow is young and Latinx? And what if that voter is just as important? In many ways, it completely disrupts how campaigns organize themselves, what types of policies they should be proposing and advocating. It then leads to a different kind of policymaking. It then leads to a more anti-racist America.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Ibram X. Kendi is author most recently of How to Be an Anti-Racist, and he's a contributing writer at The Atlantic and director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Micah Loewinger, Leah Feder, John Hanrahan, and Asta Chaturvedi. We had more help from Zandra Ellen, Anthony Bansi, and Eloise Blondio. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. Bob Garfield will be back next week. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.